So we are talking about money or finances in marriage. And so if you've got your handout, that'd be a great time to find out. We're getting towards the end. I don't know that we could finish today, but maybe one or two more times. We're getting close. So we've looked at lots of case studies, talked about different people. And we just got through talking about the 14 kind of principles for their wisdom. And we're getting into special issues. Okay, special issues. Is that around page 6? Somewhere in there? Okay, page 6. So, I thought we would start with, that's kind of a general question, does the Bible allow for retirement? And so, remember that when we talk about some of these things, sometimes we have, the Bible will command something, right? You must do it. You've got prohibit, right? You must not do it, right? Sometimes there's in between. Maybe there's things that you might be encouraged to do in the Proverbs that it's wise. You might be discouraged or warned against, right? This may not be the best path for you, but it might not be completely prohibited. And then you might have something where there really isn't anything that the Bible speaks to. You know, did you get a red car or a blue car, right? So when we think about those categories, as we're thinking through finances, we may be talking about times where we're trying to make those distinctions. You know, are we commanded to do it? Are we prohibited? Is it somewhere in between there, right? So let's look at a passage from Matthew 6 to kind of start our discussion. So Matthew 6, 19 through 20. Do not lay up treasures for yourselves treasures on earth, where moth and rust destroy, and where thieves break in and steal. But lay up for yourselves treasures in heaven, where neither moth nor rust destroys, and where thieves do not break in and steal. So we're going to have the negative and the positive. So what are we commanded here? Do not what?
Store up earthly treasures.
Earthly treasures. And what are we commanded? What's the positive? Do.
Store up heavenly treasures.
Okay. All right. So same thing. So if someone brings this up, when you're talking about should we plan for retirement, should we save for retirement, what would you say? Does this prohibit it? Does it speak to it? Thoughts on it? Yes, Diana.
I think one of the ways that, like, we can store up treasures in heaven, we're told to, you know, minister to others and to help others. Mm-hmm. And one of the ways that we can do that is financially. Mm-hmm. And so something that I know a lot of people do in retirement, once they've saved up a lot of money, mm-hmm. is they go and give it to other people and they help other people out.
Yeah. So you kind of expand on, like, what does that mean, right? What does it look like to store up treasures in heaven? And so you're talking about you're providing for maybe the needs and being generous to others.
And providing for others also means you don't put a burden upon them.
Okay.
And so there are some people who, especially in, like, the New Testament, couldn't help it, right? There was a specific mm-hmm. ministry for specific people who could not sustain themselves. And, I mean, later here on page 7, it talks about if your brother has become poor and cannot maintain himself with you, you shall support him. But as much of a blessing as that can be to everybody involved, one of the ways that you can bless others is by not being that burden upon them. And so part of retirement mm-hmm. isn't, let me see how much money I can accumulate to go to Bali every week. Although, I mean, if you want to go to Bali once in a while, that's fine.
Sure, sure.
But
once,
like,
in a while.
If you're saving up money so that you can sustain yourself even when your body can no longer work in the way that it should,
yeah.
and so that you don't become a burden upon others to maintain.
Yeah, and do you notice that do not store up earthly treasure? We left out a little descriptor there that you kind of hit on. What does it say there about the treasures that you're not supposed to store up? Look at the Matthew 6:19. Does it say do not lay up treasures on earth?
Moth and rust will destroy it.
Yeah, but it doesn't say do not lay up treasures on earth. It says do not lay up for yourself. So there's a sense in which what you're talking about, what we're talking about, is some of the treasures that we're laying up are not really for ourselves. So what would be some ways in which maybe a person could store up treasures? What does it look like then to store up treasures for yourself? So what are we actually prohibited from doing? What's the purpose? What does that mean? If we're saying it doesn't prohibit saving up for, provide for, right, what is it?
I think of greed.
Yeah.
So I'm storing it up selfishly. Only you think about myself. I want more and more.
What's that?
So you ever read The Hobbit? There's a big old dragon. Has a cape of gold.
Yeah. Yeah. It's very precious too. But in a sense, yeah, the treasure aspect, like treasure is often used both. This word's used in the New Testament that when Jesus talks about the good man out of the treasure in his own heart speaks forth, and the evil man out of what he treasures in his heart speaks. So it's kind of what you value and what you love and what you hold on to. And so there's a sense in which if we're storing it up for these selfish purposes that I want to have more security, I have more freedom, I want to depend on this treasure to give me all the things that I find. That's kind of what we're getting at. We're not laying up or valuing. My goal is not to be a multimillionaire just that as the end. Okay? So I think that's kind of a key distinction, that when we store up this earthly treasure, it's kind of, this is the end. If we get the treasure, we have what we want. Whereas if we're storing up heavenly treasure, it's more of the means. Right? The treasure itself or the money, it's a means to accomplishing something in terms of our priorities, our heavenly priorities. So what about this passage? 2 Thessalonians 3:10. For even when we were with you, we would give you this command. If anyone is not willing to work, let him not eat. So does that prohibit you retiring and stopping from work? What do you think? Okay, that's a great distinction, yeah. So, asking, are you willing to work, and are you able? I think there's another sense, too, where, I mean, why is that important? Why do you think that verse was given to those people? What is he kind of protecting the church against?
Lazy people taking advantage of.
Yeah, just coming in. The church was sharing a lot of their possessions, right? At that time, everyone was giving. And so you might have someone who comes in and is very able-bodied and just shares and takes. It's more of a taker than a giver. They're not willing to contribute, right? There's willingness and diversity. And so what is maybe the difference between someone who is not working because they're lazy and someone who's maybe not working because they've saved and retired? Like, where's the... Who's providing for those people?
Mm-hmm. They've already worked enough to provide for themselves.
Yeah. They're still, in a sense, living off of their own work. It's just that they've done that work in advance and ahead of time. Other thoughts?
I feel like you don't have to just be doing your job, like, to work.
Mm-hmm.
Like, you can work throughout, like, doing different ministry opportunities,
mm-hmm.
and by serving other people in your church, it's not just
mm-hmm.
your job. And so when you retire, like, you're retiring from your job, but we also have a job as Christians to
mm-hmm.
do ministry.
Yeah, and retirement doesn't, I think retirement may mean different things when we even say the word. Like, it doesn't mean that you just stop doing anything, right? Oftentimes what we're talking about is that we may stop working at our job to transition to some other type of work or service, something that we're more able to do, that our abilities, as we age, they may decline in that sense. Yeah.
And I think there's some jobs that you just can't do forever.
Mm-hmm.
I remember talking to
Caesar, he cut his last head of hair because his hand, I mean,
Hands and
eyes, all that stuff, just his back and stuff like that.
Mm-hmm.
So I think a lot of times retirement is just getting ready for that day when you can't provide the way you have in the past.
Yeah.
And I was thinking about that, you know, as you're young, like a lot of times you kind of ease into that where you may start working and you can't really provide for yourself at a certain age when you get your first job. And you maybe work a little bit more and work a little, and at some point, right, the goal is that you're kind of independent. So here's, right, you're young, but you can't quite reach this where you're providing for yourself. And as you age, maybe you can provide for, you know, yourself and then maybe a wife and children, right? You may be providing for more and more people because you're more and more able, your skills. And then as you get to the end of your life, those skills, that strength, all of that stuff may become less and less. And so we're hoping that when we reach this age where our abilities are diminishing, right? We want to have worked enough that we can still provide, right? Let's like read one more verse. We'll kind of talk a little bit more about that. So it's 1 Thessalonians 4, 11 through 12. Daniel, read that.
Aspire to live quietly and to mind your own affairs and to work with your hands as we instructed you, so that you may walk properly before outsiders and dependent on no one.
Yeah. So we get both two really good things there. It says, work with your hands, right, as we instructed you. So someone might say, well, you're supposed to work with your hands. How can you retire? But what's the point of working with your hands that we see in this verse? Yeah, so that you may be dependent on no one, right? And so that idea of the burden, right? Where does the burden fall? He's encouraged them, keep working, because the more you work, the less of a burden you place on others to provide for your needs, to provide for your food, to provide for your lodging, to provide for your medical. Yep.
I actually have a question for you. So I knew a guy, he turned 16 and he wanted to work.
Okay.
And his mother informed him that she was not going to allow him to work, and that like she instructed him, like, you will not live in my house and work, because when you work, it is counted against my government check.
Okay.
And so, how do we handle a situation where the Bible clearly instructs us to work, but it also instructs us clearly to obey our mother and our father, right? So in kind of a situation like that, how do we handle that really complicated dynamic where you want to honor the Lord, and you want to work, and you want to sustain yourself, but the outside of God, the primary authority in your life is telling you will not work.
Good question.
Malachi inserted his own case study.
Yeah. Just imaginary person, right?
No, this is a friend.
Okay. Well, I think, you know, is this the first question to ask is, and this kind of plays into it a little bit, is that we kind of have an Americanized version that, like you mentioned, he's 16, that, okay, when is a person an adult, right? Biblically, there's not this 18, you're an adult, or 21, you're an adult, in a sense. And so, if you're able to, you know, leave the home, especially there's that marker of leaving father and mother to be united to the wife, that's kind of a marker of you've created your own adult where you're providing for your family. But there's not these kind of arbitrary at 18. So, it's more about is he able to work and to do the work. It sounds like he is, right? Able to work and wants to work. And so it could boil down to the issue is between honoring your father and mother, right, from the commandments, and obeying your mother and father, and, you know, the idea to work and the command to work. So I think part of it is you always want to start with conversation and having him communicate. Like, it sounds like the situation is maybe he's a believer and she isn't, or maybe she is or doesn't.
She says, I go to church on Sundays.
Mm-hmm. So I think part of that would be working on the relationship too, and just saying, you know, Mom, I'm really learning and seeing that God wants me to work, that work is a good thing. Kind of revolves around maybe the whole series we've been going through, that her views about work and its usefulness and how it should fit into the life of a believer are different, and kind of creates a different discussion. And so it does put him in a difficult spot. I don't know that he would be wrong to get a job or to wait to honor her necessarily. That I think there is a little bit of gray area in the sense that he would, it depends on the heart of why he's doing that. If he's seeking to honor his mother, or to say maybe I could work just a little bit, or try and find a happy medium. But he should be persistently pursuing the idea that, Mom, you know, I think work is good. I need to find a job. I'm going to, you know, I would like to start now, type of thing. Yeah.
I mean, there's also a practical side to just exploring tax codes and how much his income actually does affect her return or whatever, and dealing with dependents and stuff. So there's probably a practical reality of just saying, Mom, actually this doesn't affect like you think it does.
Yeah. And there it's more common than you think, especially there are times in the recent 5 years since there was a lot of COVID, stimulus, unemployment type of things, where I had a friend that he is a youth pastor, and many of his youth that usually worked specifically chose not to because they were able to receive higher benefits during that time than they could get earning at their part-time jobs. And so they intentionally chose, we're going to receive that because I'm going to make more money not doing anything than if I were to go work. So that's kind of an abuse almost of saying if you're able to work. And that's kind of if we live in a time where you're incentivized not to work, you kind of have to choose what is the way that you're going to live. Are you going to pursue work even if you have the option to receive those benefits? So understanding them, but also kind of living by conviction as well.
I think it would be a good learning experience. When I was growing up, my mom and I were pretty poor. Mm-hmm. So I started working, and I helped pay the bills so that I could learn what it was like to live on my own. So in that respect, he could learn to help pay on the electric and the gas, that way he knows when he gets his own place how much money he might need.
Yeah, yeah. There's a lot of things when we talk about, like, again, the applications, is that, you know, as parents, we want to work hard to provide for our children. That's a scriptural command. That what you're talking about is that sometimes that there's a transitional time where you want to, part of your teaching and training is to allow them to work. And so that's, each parent kind of has that discussion in your, as you're raising your kids, when or if you want your kids to work and why. Why do you want them to work? Do you want them to learn lessons about work versus I just want to stay home so that they can help pay for the cars, right? You've got different motivations, right and wrong motivations.
Also, just to clarify, I don't know the whole situation just because I don't know him very well.
Mm-hmm. So. Okay. Continue the conversation with him and see how he's going. I think Malachi brought up, like, in the case of planning for retirement, when we talk about that and working to save for retirement, in scriptural, right, in those times, if you didn't have relatives, what would happen to you? You got too old, you couldn't work, and you didn't have children that were willing to take care of you. What were their options? No?
Begging.
No social security.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Begging.
There's lots of stories of people just were begging, right? Who were, even the paralyzed, they couldn't work, they just sat, they begged. So it's very different kind of context in terms of how dire the situation could be. Right? Let's look at 1 Timothy 5. 1 Timothy 5.
Can I make a note on 1 Thessalonians?
Yeah, yeah, before we go on.
One of the things that we didn't touch on, though, was just that the point of working here talks about your testimony to outsiders. We just kind of hit on that in this last series about this, the way you work, and that your coworkers and those around you, and that Christians should be the hardest workers.
Yeah. Yeah. And it not only does it speak to unbelievers around you, but also it's a witness to the believers in the church, it's a witness to your family. If you're a hard worker, you're going to show that you value hard work. If you have a hardworking mom and dad, right, it teaches you the value of hard work. It's pretty true. Properly before outside. If any believing woman has relatives who are widows, let her care for them. Let the church not be burdened so that it may care for those who are truly widows. So what's the command here? Who is this really to?
Family.
Okay. And specifically he's saying if there's a believing woman, and so and she has relatives who are widows. So you think this would also maybe men have relatives that are widows? Probably. Mm-hmm. Right? But we're talking about, he says, a woman has relatives who are widows, let her care for them. And why? Why are they to care for them if they're widows? Yeah. So not to be burdened on the church.
So that the church can then care for those who truly need.
Right. And what do you think that means if they're truly a widow?
When they don't have family to care.
Right. So they've lost their spouse and there's no children there. They didn't have children or they're gone, right? And this is something that as you are kind of in this region, right? You guys are switching, so you grow up, you have your parents are working, providing for you. Then there's a time where maybe you're working, your parents, everybody's working, everybody's healthy, right? But you have to be thoughtful of what's going to happen when I'm reaching here, who's over here? Your parents, your mom and your dad, right? And so that's a conversation that as you get in your working life, as your parents are reaching 60, 70, or whatever age that is where they're starting to think about having conversations about whether or not they have planned for retirement, whether or not they have enough to provide for their own needs. So let's say that you have to talk with your mom and dad, and they're like, we're just living off of what we're making. We're going to work until we die. I mean, what are some thoughts that might go through your mind there?
Awesome.
Yeah, they can do it. They can do it. Right? What if they have some saved up and they retire and then they're living and as the retirement's going, maybe they start to have some issues where they're seeing that the money might start to run out. What are some conversations you maybe need to have? Think when we think about the biblical principle, right? Think about this verse, right? The heart of it is saying, if you have a parent, right, and they're unable to care for themselves, right? If they have these widows, they can't work, they haven't retired, maybe they can't live off of their Social Security, those type of things. The involvement comes in. Are you free to just let them go, you know, without any intervention? Right? Or is there a sense in which you can care for them and help provide for them to relieve that burden? Yes?
My dad passed away about 6 years ago.
Mm-hmm.
He never told me he needed help. Mm-hmm. He never told me he needed finances.
Mm-hmm.
So I think there's a lot of parents with the pride
mm-hmm.
that are afraid to say,
mm-hmm.
you know, because when he got toward the end of his life, he's like, I had to sell my guns, I had to do all this. And I'm like, why didn't you come to me?
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, he never said a word.
Yeah.
So I think that happens a lot.
Yeah. Is there anybody else that has worked through issues with your parents and talked about what are you going to do? And
I mean, it's one of those things where because you don't have an authority over them, so you can't like tell
mm-hmm.
them what they
mm-hmm.
have to do or what they don't mm-hmm. have to do. And I know I've just always like made requests, and thankfully my dad's pretty open and he's kind of let us know where he's at.
Mm-hmm.
Like even in that sense there's a conversation of like, okay, are you protecting that
mm-hmm.
in the sense that you have the right legal stuff that if you do pass away
mm-hmm.
You know, is there a will, there's all that stuff, and where's it at, can
mm-hmm.
I get to it, you know, kind of thing. And
right.
And I mean, just I think everybody's relationship with their parents.
Yeah. Yeah, and as they enter into each transition, if maybe they're retiring or maybe their health has a change, just being open, asking them, are you okay? Do you have enough? Is there anything that we can do to help? And sometimes parents plan really well, but maybe there's an unexpected tragedy or they outlive longer than they think. You know, there's a lot of things that can happen. Other things, you guys, good conversations you've had with parents or plans that you've made? Yeah, Andy.
I think being involved is important, especially when parents get older, they don't think as clearly.
Mm-hmm.
So just being willing to help them think through.
Just in general.
Yeah, just in general. Just about life, about finances, about everyday decisions.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I think it's important to be involved, especially if you have a good relationship with your parents, because when they die, they don't want it to be hard to find the finances or hard to,
mm-hmm.
you know, settle their debts or whatever it is. If you know about them and can set things up to where
mm-hmm.
things transition,
mm-hmm.
it'll be a lot easier for you and your siblings.
Yeah.
Instead of having to go to court and pay lawyers. And
yeah.
Do all these things too. So.
And I think most of us, many people, as I've talked to my parents or grandparents, they oftentimes structure their retirement learning from what it was like as a kid when their parents
100%.
Retired and passed away, right? All the difficult things that, when mom and dad were retired or when they died, this was really a burden on us. And then they say, we don't want to be that way to our kids in one way or the other. So sometimes it's being really clear on what you want to happen to your estate. Right? This is what will happen, telling them beforehand. So you kind of think about retirement from two sides, like how do you support those who are older, who are going through retirement, who are their children, how can you help them, support them? In the case of you have this widow, but also what lessons can you learn from that to now when you're in that position to prepare your family, to what conversations with your kids? Judy.
My dad made sure everything was taken care of.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, he had everything
yeah.
done, all his T's crossed and the I's dotted.
Right.
He had his funeral planned, everything. My mother, on the opposite hand, I have a very dear girlfriend, and she knew more
mm-hmm.
about what my mother wanted
mm-hmm.
than my sister and I did, because she never...
Yeah.
We'll discuss anything like
yeah.
that.
And for some people, it's
absolutely nothing about
yeah.
mother's finances, what her desire was when she died, nothing.
And sometimes it's a combination of either it's very uncomfortable to talk about, or they haven't thought through. Catherine, where are you?
Yeah, I was just gonna say, I think it has to be a conversation that's planned out like ahead of time.
Mm-hmm.
Probably don't want to bring it up at like Christmas.
Yeah.
They're hard conversations from both sides.
Yeah, very much so. Josh?
I think the attitude we want the younger, looking at aging parents, we want an attitude of generosity
mm-hmm.
and love,
mm-hmm.
not an attitude of fairness.
yeah.
I think of there's a family we know where the parents are getting older,
mm-hmm.
dad's still working, so he wants to retire, but he can't retire
mm-hmm.
because he has debt.
Mm-hmm.
And but physically it's getting harder and harder and harder. And they have one son, part of their debt is they're still paying for his college debt. They had made bad decisions when they were younger in their finances. They've been faithful for years, they made bad decisions financially.
Mm-hmm.
They're still paying off their son's debt. And he was allowing them to pay off his debt, even though he had the ability to help free them of that debt. Now he's in his 30s, 40s, whatever.
Mm-hmm.
But they have another child who done well, and that child and spouse actually reached out to them, this is the last year or two, and sat down with the parents and said, we're going to pay off all of your debt and
mm-hmm.
free you
mm-hmm.
from the burden of work. So so that you can enjoy these final years.
Yeah.
That was just a really beautiful act of grace on one hand, because the other kids didn't have any, it wasn't fair. They didn't have to do it, but they wanted to care for their aging parents in a way that freed them.
Yeah.
And the other child, I don't think probably being cruel, she didn't even think about it, was actually living off the burden and then placed on the parents.
Yeah, I think that we'll talk about it more in a minute, but like you mentioned, the debt, like, there's a sense in which in the New Testament, there debts often symbolizes also like a sin debt, and that generosity, there's a sense in which, like when we pray sometimes, that the translation is, forgive us our debts as we forgive those, right, who are indebted to us. So there's that idea that when we extend forgiveness, it comes out of this infinite store of forgiveness that we've been given. And so, like, that heart should be, like, if someone's indebted to us, there's many times in the scriptures that Jesus talks about, you know, give without expecting to be repaid. So that's...
Yeah, one more thing. There's a lot of scams out there, and they target retirees and older people. So being involved in your parents' finances is an act of protection for them, not necessarily being nosy. Mm-hmm. It'd be good to know, what's this charge here? Do you know where this is going? It may not be an outright fraud, but just getting people to sign up for some subscription service that's free for the first month, and then they just get them from there.
Yeah. And there could be discussions where, much like we talked about with marriage, where the spouses are both on the account and they can both see the activity.
Yeah.
It may be a point at which you talk about ahead of time, you know, mom, dad, maybe at some point it would be good to kind of relieve the burden and the pressure of you managing everything if you just put us on there to help see and check in with you and meet with you. And that can be tough, because one of the hardest things about when we have those conversations is that you're talking to someone who raised you and is used to have being independent for so many decades. And now for them to kind of start to let go of things is difficult.
Giving
sometimes
up control. I mean, that's what
giving up control and saying, admitting that, okay, I'm not able to do all the things that I once was able to do.
I think there's another real challenge when your parents are divorced and remarried.
Mm-hmm.
Both of our dads, our moms are gone, but we could have had those conversations with our moms, but our dads are remarried, and it's not a conversation you can really have with them.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And it gets more complex, because oftentimes there might be two or three different families depending on divorce and remarriage. And so many of the conflicts that come about from both sides are, one, who's going to care for mom or dad if you've got different sets of kids, right? Who does that responsibility fall to? And so that may be really difficult if there's no relationship between those different kids.
I think a lot of this comes down to, I don't remember the exact verse, but it's insofar as pertains to you, you can only be at peace with those who wish to be at peace with you, and you can only talk about finances with those who want to talk about their finances with you.
Mm-hmm.
It doesn't mean like don't cry and just give up immediately, but
yeah.
And there's only so much that you were responsible for, even in a biblical sense.
Yeah.
I told them I'd be taking care of investment roles.
That's right.
Yeah.
You're my retirement. You are my retirement.
The agreement was to change my diapers when I was a kid.
That's right.
Change his diapers when he was older.
There you go. There we go. What a great, wonderful, wonderful. So let's return and let's look at 1 Timothy and kind of try and wrap this up, this idea. 1 Timothy 5:8. But if anyone does not provide for his relatives, and especially for members of his household, he has denied the faith and is worse than an unbeliever. And so we've talked about when primarily we're thinking about that in terms of like our working years, that we're providing for those who can't yet work to provide themselves, the younger ones, as well as we can provide for those who are past those years, who are unable, if
if we need to. Now, we can remove the burden from the younger ones if we've worked enough to both provide for ourselves now, provide for our children, and kind of provide for our future self. And so that kind of role of retirement, the idea and the principle is behind this verse, right? If you save enough that you can provide for yourself and your spouse after you're able to work, you are relieving that burden, relieving it from your children and from also from the church, okay? And so when you think about retirement, right, it's to help you live. And then the last question there is, how can you use our retirement to serve the church? So think about that. Let's say you do save enough, you're no longer able to go out and farm, you know, all day long, or you're no longer able to cut hair. How could you use that time to serve the church?
I think George Sleaser has been a model.
Everybody write George Sleaser in your...
And I think John Wormley's a newer retired than he as well. They're working for the church, have worked for the church.
Yeah. And sometimes they're busier when they retire than when they're working, but it's a different type of work, different type of schedule.
Any they other? Just quit life and, you know, cruise the work or cruise wherever, whatever.
Yeah, and it's kind of just, I don't know what the stats are for women, but men who retire and just quit working completely die often very soon after. They lose what they are living for. And so when you totally completely quit working, it hastens your death in statistically.
You always feel really great the first hour of a weekday where you're not working. And then, or at least I do.
Oh.
And then after that, I'm like,
you need to be working.
Right now.
Yeah, yeah. Just see what you're going
to say. I think there's, especially, I think Paul talks about powerful work of widows,
mm-hmm.
that where they pray without ceasing,
mm-hmm.
saints.
Mm-hmm.
And so like the literal, like it's almost more powerful than any work, because they are before the throne of God,
mm-hmm.
asking for these outlandish requests that the Lord happily wants to answer.
Mm-hmm.
And like, it's like just powerful, like, yeah, just hearing when there are widows or those in retirement who are like, I'm praying for you. Like, you know that they're a faithful saint, like that so much of what they're gonna pray for is gonna happen. And just that the power of that is it's just so beautiful. And I don't know I don't know how often in our day those retired take that seriously.
Yeah.
Their responsibility.
Yeah.
To be
there's a tremendous amount that you could do through prayer.
Yeah.
And what were you going to say?
I just have a question. I'm looking at 1 Timothy 5:8, thinking about members of his household.
Mm-hmm.
Does that go both ways, or is it only in descending order? So I guess I'm thinking about the scenario of, like, I've known believing families who haven't really saved for retirement, and their kids will then care for them, and they'll move back in with their kids, and they'll care with them until death. I mean,
mm-hmm.
even in serious mental disorders or mental loss or Parkinson's, I mean, severe things that happen, they'll still stay
mm-hmm.
with their kids, and they'll still care for them. So I'm just, you know, thinking through, yeah, I've seen it both ways, where I've seen, like, really godly families,
mm-hmm.
have their parents move in with them,
mm-hmm.
and they care for them.
Mm-hmm.
And it's one because they didn't have retirement, but also because they wanted to take care of their parents.
Yeah.
And so, like, is that a command we're to fulfill of, you know, never putting our parents into a nursing home?
Yeah, I'll share kind of my own conviction, I guess, is that ideally, right, the thing we want to avoid is either case saying it's totally on you. So the kids saying, you know, mom and dad are on their own, or the parents saying the kids are on your own. And ideally, both the parents would save for retirement to say, we want to provide for you and not have that burden. And the kids are also saying, whatever you need, we're there. So, like, my mother and father-in-law and their parents, they lived into their late 90s, Chris's grandparents, and they were very faithful to work, to save. They had like the long-term health care insurance, all those things that as wise as you can be to make sure that you've provided for yourself and not a burden. And they went through times where it's often not just the financial aspect, it's can they get up? Do they need assisted living? Do they need someone to help them go to the bathroom? All those type of things. And so they did, there was a time where they went to the manor, Presbyterian Manor, and they had a good environment where they had peers and they were interacting, those type of things. But then there also came a time when the first one of them, grandma passed away, grandpa was kind of isolated, weren't able to go see him because of some of the restrictions. And so they made it possible to bring him back home to the farm for the kind of those last few years. And that was one of the biggest, clearest testimonies of the love of Christ, because they could have, provided for him and left him there, and there would have been nothing wrong with that in a sense. But it's a true testament to love of Mike and Sharon would take turns. They would sleep up there, and he would, ring a bell. He couldn't get out of bed, so when he had to go to the bathroom. Just very specific, clear ways to care for your mom and dad. And that, it just speaks a tremendous amount. And it shows them just kind of an extra layer of love and compassion for them.
But I've also known families where,
go ahead, Judy, and then we'll come over. Right. They might want to.
My dad, he was totally cognitive to the very end. And he chose to spend his last month of his life in a nursing home. He could have, because he was welcome at my sister's and my brother-in-law's home. But he said he did not want that.
Yeah.
He did not want to be a burden on them. I couldn't do it because I was breadwinner for me, and my dad realized that.
Yeah.
That he chose himself to go into a nursing home.
And you're absolutely right.
That was his choice.
Some parents, and as a kid, it is a balance, because you want to honor as much as possible your parents' wishes, and some parents may want to choose that. And there's very little, like you said, where you want to butt in and say no. Tell your parents that they shouldn't do this or that. And so that might be an option too. What are you going to add?
What Judy said was pretty much exactly what I was going to say.
Yeah.
I would just add that at that point, your only duty is that you should still go visit them at the nursing home. If your parents prefer the independence relatively of the nursing home, that's great. That doesn't mean that they're not your family.
Right.
You still owe them at least, visit them once a week.
Yeah.
And
I think you guys brought up the key point. It's if you have a conversation with your mom and dad or whoever it is, both of them, what is it? What are their wishes, right? What do they want? What's the most loving thing towards them? What are they able to do? What are you able to do? And you're both seeking to, as much as possible, honor one another's wishes and provide for their for those kind of last days. And so when we think about planning our retirement, the more clearly you can think about, plan about, and talk about those things, that adds to the financial aspect, so that you can tell your kids, this is what mom and I want, this is what we want to do, this is how we are planning for this. It kind of relieves the burden, it frees your kids up, it frees that generation to know, this is how I can honor my mom, this I can honor my dad, this I can provide for my family, right? I can provide, and that's kind of our goal as a whole.
Can I say one more thing? I was reading this in my quiet time this morning.
Excellent timing.
Yes. 2 Corinthians 12:14 says, "For children are not obligated to save up for their parents, but parents for their children." Which I thought was kind of interesting. Where there is the expected is that the parents, especially in an agricultural economy, you pass on the estate to your children. You're always looking to the future. And you don't want to rob from your children to pay
For your last,
Yeah, so, and obviously, you have the other passage of where Jesus rebukes the Pharisees for declaring all their stuff Corban so that they don't have to provide for their parents.
Yeah.
You know, who are impoverished.
Yeah.
But I think that the heart is, like, parents should want their children to have as much money as possible because that's the next generation, and they want to make sure that they're able to take care of their needs.
Yeah.
I've known some cultures where the retirement is collecting from each of their...
Yeah, each of the kids that
each
has...
Each of their kids a monthly stipend.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. So that's a good, you know, good conversations. It's like your homework for the class today is if you have a mom and dad, which most of you guys, yeah. Think about it from both sides. Think about it from how can I be a blessing to if I have parents or grandparents that are entering into retirement, or think about it from what would I want to plan for me, for myself, for my spouse? What would we want to plan to provide for our kids so that we're a blessing, we're providing for ourselves, and hopefully providing for others within our household. We'll wrap up a couple minutes early. Let me pray for us. Father, I just give you so many thanks for the way that you provide for us. And I thank you that, as you've said, you know, the birds of the air don't worry about these things and you provide for them. And yet you call us and you've told us that the way in which you provide for us is through work. And that work is a blessing, and it's a way that we provide goods and services, we provide food, we provide clothing, we provide all these things, not only for ourselves, but for those that we care for our spouses and for our children, and sometimes for our parents. And I pray that you'd help give us great wisdom, and also just that you'd give us a heart that is a heart of generosity and a heart of love that seeks to be a caring, providing person and that have a marriage that's full of caring provision. Give us a desire to work heartily, to see our jobs, no matter where we work, as working for you and giving all of the glory and all the praise to you so that, as we talked about, our work would be a witness to the world. They would wonder, why do we work so hard? Why do we give so generously of the money that we've earned to our family and to the church? And I just pray that we would become more givers than takers, that we give of our life, we give of our service, and give to your work. And we ask this in the name of your Son, Jesus. Amen.